This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Time. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. This is the weekend of June the 26th, 2010, the first week of summer, right after the summer solstice. So.
And happy birthday, Dan. It was your birthday yesterday. I won't say how old you are.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And we're podcasting everywhere.
And this weekly show is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And get that right. A lot of people in the media say freedom of.
They can't compute what our name really is.
Freedom from religion, which means most of our members, all of our members, are people who are free from religion in their personal lives, who agree that the government itself should also be free from religion. The government should be neutral, which is why we work to keep state and church separate. And you've heard about a lot of our lawsuits over the months and the years. And we also work to educate the public about the views of those of us who are non-believers, mostly atheists and agnostics.
And speaking of the views of non-believers, Dan, you had a little window into European non-belief because you just came back from an exciting, was it 5-day trip in Denmark?
Yes, it was a 3-day conference in Copenhagen, European Free Thought. It was organized by Atheist Alliance International, and the local work was done by a group called Atheist I forget exactly what it's called, but it's the Atheist of Denmark is their group. And I was interviewed by a Christian daily newspaper there. As soon as I landed, a very nice Christian woman, they're very liberal there, or moderate to liberal. And I couldn't read the story, but Stinus, the organizer, told me it was a very good, balanced story. And it has your picture in it, too. It has us standing here at the mic here in 92.1 in a Danish newspaper. and it was fun, and there were a lot of speakers, Richard Dawkins and James Randi and Rebecca Neuberger Goldstein, whom we've had on the show, and other people like
P.Z. Myers.
P.Z. Myers and Gregory Paul, and the Europeans, and they were from all over Europe, and some Americans, Ireland and England and Scotland and Norway and Sweden and France and the Netherlands and different countries.
Well, people can't be very religious overall in Denmark.
Not in Denmark, no. But they were really excited to hear about our National Day of Prayer victory. They thought that was big news. Of course, we sued Obama and enjoined the president, pending the appeals, enjoined the president of our country from issuing a proclamation of prayer. And they're lamenting the fact that they don't have in their countries anything comparable to our First Amendment, our Bill of Rights, especially our Establishment Clause, which is our whole basic reason for going into court with our foundation. So it was big news. They were celebrating. At the end of the conference, we produced something that we call the Copenhagen Declaration, which is the position of atheists on religion and government. And I think they're about ready to put that online. You might be able to go online, look for atheists of Denmark.
Let's cut to the chase. What about the godless beer?
The organizers of the conference also own a brewery, a very good brewery, by the way, and I hear it's selling well in Canada, and it's just being introduced into the United States. It's called Goodlus. One of their beers is called Goodlus, which means godless, and it's called Unbelievably Good Beer, the Devil's Brew, and they also have one called Origin Ale, which has the picture of Charles Darwin on it, and I brought back 6 bottles, and our staff is right now testing it, and I'm going to get some reviews about the godless beer.
Now, today's guest is a very interesting fellow, Nate Phelps. He's one of the estranged children of Pastor Fred Phelps. We've all unfortunately heard of the Westboro Baptist Church. He's the notorious Kansas preacher who goes around picketing the funerals of soldiers with these very hateful anti-gay messages.
And one of his sons, Nate Phelps, has been doing some speaking. He has his own website, countering his dad's philosophy, and he will be joining us in the second half of today's show.
And in the news department, we want to comment on all this unfortunate also religion in government news concerning the Gulf of Mexico oil spill and that terrible environmental disaster.
Last Sunday, you may have caught, was declared a day of prayer by Louisiana lawmakers. They passed a resolution in that state saying, "The citizens of Louisiana are urged to pray for a solution to this crisis, a crisis that remains unaffected by the efforts of mortal men."
And unaffected by the efforts of supernatural, because since that day of prayer, the oil keeps gushing. So nothing fails like prayer in the Gulf of Mexico. And this particularly irrational resolution offered the usual primitive, supernatural, superstitious invocations, including claiming that a day of unified intercessory prayer, this is a quote, and prayers woven together through common effort can themselves become an awesome and powerful voice. And I think that's kind of blasphemous, isn't it, Dan? Because it makes it sound like humans can force a god to do something.
Well, that's kind of all prayer. Even the Greeks and the Romans, if they said the right things, if you said the right number of prayers and beads, and if you forced it and you showed this god how deeply you cared, that you could actually get this god to change its mind. And by the way, calling it intercessory prayer is wrong. That's the kind of prayer on behalf of another person. So unless you think the Gulf of Mexico is a person, they shouldn't be using intercessory prayer.
Well, it didn't work, whatever they did.
Prayer is the ultimate cop-out. It's a real gulf between faith and reason. Prayer is a concession that we human beings, aren't going to do anything about it, or we can't do anything about it, which in this case would be to take responsible action to prevent future catastrophes like this, by prohibiting the many similar deep-sea oil drilling operations taking place on ocean floors. Bill Nye, the science guy, he's pointed out that it's easier to go to the surface of the moon than the surface of the ocean. So what are we doing there when we are beyond the limits of human technology?
And this brings us to President Barack Obama's underwhelming speech a week ago. New York Times columnist Gail Collins pointed out that there were no less than 17 references in it to God, prayer, blessings, or faith in this address on the oil spill crisis. Let's listen to some of this.
It's called The Blessing of the Fleet. And today it's a celebration where clergy from different religions gather to say a prayer for the sea and success of the men and women who will soon head out to sea, some for weeks at a time. And still, they came and they prayed. The blessing is not that God has promised to remove all obstacles and dangers. The blessing is that He is with us always, a blessing that's granted even in the midst of the storm. Tonight, we pray for that courage. We pray for the people of the Gulf. And we pray that a hand may guide us through the storm towards a brighter day. Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
So notice that he said prayer isn't going to change anything. It's not going to overcome the forces of nature. The blessing is just the knowledge that God is with us no matter what happens. Well, what a ultimate cop-out. Prayer is what politicians and preachers fall back on when they don't want to or they cannot offer true leadership. Are we prepared to learn anything from this environmental disaster, or are we just going to pray about it?
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. Coming up, we'll be talking with Nate Phelps, who survived being part of Reverend Fred Phelps' family and is speaking out now against those anti-gay fundamentalist Christian crusaders. And we'll also look at the reaction in Chicago and nationwide to FFRF's Sleepin' on Sundays bus campaign in downtown Chicago.
I'm State Senator Ernie Chambers from Nebraska. I'm on Free Thought Radio, which is like an oasis in the Sahara Desert.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I am Dan Barker, and I'm here with Annie Laurie Gaylor.
FFRF's new bus campaign in downtown Chicago is stirring things up and getting a lot of press attention. A story in the Chicago Tribune that went over the wire nationwide, some national TV, and let's listen to one of two segments on the Chicago local Fox News station. You'll hear an unidentified freethinker being interviewed, saying some nice things, and that would be our member Gary Statkus.
Signs on some CTA buses have some riders wondering if it's freedom of speech or just a rude message to people who go to church on Sunday mornings. Darlene Hill has been talking to passengers, and she joins us live with their reaction. Hi, Darlene.
Hey, Robin. The Freedom of Religion Foundation has put out dozens of signs telling, of course, churchgoers to, instead of going out to church on Sunday morning, why don't you sleep in and get some rest? Now, they're excited about their new campaign, but one local pastor that we spoke with thousands in his congregation, well, he says that new gimmick will not work on the faithful. As the wheels on the bus go round and round, they'll be carrying around five signs like these. Hundreds more with different quotes from famous people will be hanging from the inside of CTA buses within the next couple of weeks. Well, the foundation says they want to keep church and state separate. They say they're not telling people not to go to church. They just want to remind people of their options, other things they could or should be doing instead of singing and praising God's name. Pastor Byron Brazier of Apostolic God says those ads will not work.
It's just a way of the organization to make people think about their life in religion. And does someone really need to be religious? Like, I am an agnostic. The organization also has atheists among the members and other free thinkers.
When a person has faith in their Savior, it's not about a condition of mind. So you have to look at this type of thought process as something that is maybe normal in a secular world, but it's something that will never impact the church as a whole.
Now, we called CTA and asked them about running ads like that. Their spokesperson told us this afternoon that the spot fits their criteria. It has to be truthful, cannot be sexually explicit or obscene, and it can in no way incite lawless or illegal action. Now, tonight here on State Street, we talked to a couple of people out here behind us catching the bus tonight, and they said that ad space could be a waste of time and a waste of money.
No, that is really a waste of time, and it's a person's choice if they choose to get up on Sunday morning and go. I personally go to church every Sunday, so I find it kind of offensive that they would even put those signs up on the public transportation. It's a person's choice if they want to go to church.
If they're paying for the space, they should be able to put what they want.
Now, the foundation says here in Chicago, they will continue to run those ads on CTA buses as they travel around. Most of them can be found right now on the south side in areas. But they did tell me that in some of the other major cities, those signs are now found on billboards. Back to you guys in the studio.
All right. Thanks so much, Darlene.
Well, it's good to know that sleeping in on Sunday is not a lawless or illegal activity.
Or obscene.
Or we'd be in trouble. And the song that I wrote about that, the Sunday Morning Blues, has a line in there, "Preacher, don't you try to tell me what's best, because I know that Sunday is the day of rest."
And what the world really needs is a good night's sleep.
Yeah, so sleeping on Sundays. Then Fox News in Chicago, they also did a longer in-studio interview between one of our members, whose name is Mike Wieda. He's the lifetime member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Between him and a local woman pastor. And we want to thank both Gary Statkus and Mike Wieda for representing FFRF so well. Now, we just got time to play an interview that Annie Laurie did, fittingly, last Sunday morning, about the Sleep In on Sunday campaign.
Yeah, and it was a pretty early in the morning for me interview, so I didn't get to sleep in too much that Sunday, but it was still fun.
And that interview was broadcast on MSNBC television nationwide, and we've been contacted by lots of people who heard that interview.
One group in Chicago wants you to lose your religion and skip church altogether. The Freedom From Religion Foundation has sponsored a bus billboard campaign with the slogan, "Sleep In on Sundays." Joining me now on the phone is their co-president, Annie Laurie Gaylor. Good morning. What do you hope to accomplish with this campaign?
Well, we wanted to have a light way to promote the free thought point of view that there are many Americans who are not religious, that we think religion does more harm than good, but we wanted to say it in a quick way that might make someone smile. And it's really metaphorical. It's not that you have to sleep in on Sundays, but why church? Why believe in a religion if it's not true? We should be concentrating our energies on this world and not some unknown, unprovable afterlife.
Well, I think most people, even if they agreed with you, even if they were atheists, could look at evidence that shows incontrovertibly the good work that's done on this earth by religious organizations, from care to education to charitable works that frankly no one else is doing.
Well, actually, religion tends to get the credit and taxpayers get the bill. I mean, just look at the faith-based initiative. Most, if you look at the statistics on most churches, they spend most of their money on infrastructure, salaries, a very small percentage on charity, and they are given automatic tax exemption with the assumption they are doing charity. But many charities have been founded by atheists, and many charities are entirely secular. And I think it's interesting that the teabaggers are largely describing themselves as crazy Christians. They don't want to have a social network in this country because they know that in Europe, churches have fallen away when people's basic needs are taken care of by the government. When you worry
about
bankruptcy.
I've got to say, I think you're painting with a broad brush, because I'm somebody who, when I give to charity, I always go online to check to see what percentage of what I donate goes to the actual charitable works and how much goes to the infrastructure and how much goes to paying salaries and overhead. And I often find that those with the lowest overhead are indeed those with some sort of religious affiliation.
Well, look, Charity Navigator for the Freedom from Religion Foundation, we're an educational charity, and we have a very, very high rating for low infrastructure. I think that's a broad stroke. I mean, look at the news today with Baghdad. Look at the people killed in the name of religion for an imaginary God for whom there's no proof that he or she exists. We think that people should determine views on religion based on reason, on whether something is true or not. But I would say that on balance, more harm has been done in the name of religion than good. We give religion such a free pass in this country, and it's a taboo to criticize religion, and we're never supposed to say anything bad about it. And I think people are brainwashed by these kinds of views. I think that
you're telling me that the people who right now are at church, who are finding themselves in a much better place because their own personal experiences, you want to put your experience in their place and tell them that they'd be better off when their own experience has shown them that's not the case?
Well, ask
I mean, them. What does it really hurt if somebody, you don't have to believe, but if somebody wants to go to church and they find, whether it's comfort or strength or whatever they get out of going to church, how does that hurt you?
Well, ask the thousands, hundreds of thousands of altar boys in their families, for example, about some of the harm of going to church, the fact that churches don't put themselves. We think there should be free exercise of religion. If you want to go to church, that's fine with me, but look at how churches advertise 24/7 on the air, on the public airwaves, crosses all over our landscapes, huge churches and steeples and cathedrals. We think it's time that an atheist agnostic group such as ours should be advertising more, taking a few signs in Chicago that we're here too. There is an alternative to religion, and that you can do better things than go to church.
Well, I'm not sure that that's for any of us to decide what people do with their time and what works for them, but Annie, thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Well, that was good, Annie Laurie. You were awake enough to really hit hard on that interview and to talk about Europe and how they have a strong safety net there, and there's very little religion, and yet the people are doing very well. And, you know, a lot of religious people do good work, but they are often doing it in spite of their religion. They're using their religion like a vehicle.
Or they're doing they have an ulterior motive.
Or they're trying to do it to say our like, group is, yeah.
A soup kitchen, but you have to listen to a prayer first.
Yeah. So,
and, you know, should we really be doing good in the name of atheism, or should we just be doing good, period?
For goodness sake, yeah.
Or, well, to help other people.
And besides, I would question those studies. You can find some select studies that show that people who are religious are more charitable, but then you can find the opposite, that many of these churches, especially the right-wing churches, contribute less to actual charity. It tends to be the liberal congregation.
At least religion gets the bulk of charitable dollars. I'm Annie Larigella with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. Coming up, we're going to hear the views of Nathan Phelps, kind of an expose about his notorious father, the Reverend Fred Phelps, and the notorious Westboro Baptist Church, the very homophobic institution, and hear some kind of chilling things about what it was like to grow up in that family.
So stay tuned.
Hello, my name is Dennis Bauer from Spokane, Washington, currently president of the In the Northwest Free Thought Society, which is a chapter of FFRF, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Larigella with Dan Barker.
Our guest today by telephone is in, Calgary. He's in Calgary, Canada. His name is Nathan Phelps. He's one of the estranged sons of the notorious anti-gay Reverend Fred Phelps. Nate Phelps has a website. He's appeared on Nightline, and he's one of 13, a baker's dozen, I guess, 13 of Reverend Fred Phelps' children. He's working on a book about his experiences growing up in that family, and we're going to talk about what kind of a family that was. I think most of our listeners know about Fred Phelps, but and then his book will be about his leaving religion. So welcome to Free Thought Radio, Nate.
Thank you very much, Dan.
It's a real pleasure to talk to you. So before we get into kind of the antics of your dad and the family, we know your dad was and is a true believer. I want to know, when you were a kid, did you really believe that stuff, or were you just going along because you felt forced to?
Well, you know, that's actually a good question, because I always had questions in my mind when he would be preaching and would portray, you know, events of the world as having some kind of divine significance to him. And I just never saw that. It just seemed too complex in my mind. So I had thoughts like that growing up, but it was such an intense indoctrination process that, first of all, you didn't talk about those doubts. And second of all, it gets ingrained in you to some degree. So there was a lot of confusion for me growing up there.
Well, before we proceed, there probably are listeners who aren't totally familiar with who your dad is. I mean, that would be nice, actually, since he's gotten so much publicity. Do you want to tell people briefly about Fred Phelps and the church he founded?
Sure. He's my father's a what I call a hyper-Calvinist. He has been the pastor of the Westboro Baptist Church in Topeka since, I believe, 1955 is when he started there. And in the early 90s, they started picketing at the local park in Topeka against gays. And that has ramped up to the point now where they've done over 40,000 pickets around the country and around the world. And basically the essence of their message is that the world is doomed. There's nothing anybody can do about it now. But it's their job to let the world know that they're doomed because we are embracing the idea of equality for gays.
So the website that your dad famously started is called what? Was called?
The church itself?
Well, the website, isn't it called GodHatesFags?
Yeah, the website is GodHatesFags.com. That's right.
And he's the guy that goes around the country picketing at soldiers' funerals, and I have never been able to figure that out.
Well, yeah, it's kind of a bizarre link, but the essence of it is that these soldiers are fighting for a country that has embraced gay equality and are therefore damned, and that this is God's judgment on the world or on the country because of the path we've gone down.
Now, I was reading you have a website called
NatePhelps.com.
NatePhelps.com. And you have a very moving speech up there that you've given. And you mentioned that your dad has a law degree, which I never realized, I guess. I knew one of your sisters had a law degree. But he was working as an attorney before he became a preacher?
Well, no, he was working as a preacher. That was his calling. But when he started that church, it took him about 6 months to enrage the congregation to the point that everybody left. So he continued to preach to his family and to, there were two other families there when I was growing up, but he couldn't, you know, earn a living doing that. So he went to law school, became an attorney, and eventually 11 of my 12 siblings got their law degree as well. So there's a lot of lawyers, but my father actually was disbarred, I think, back in the late 70s. So he does not practice law anymore.
Now, you don't have a law degree.
I don't, and my older brother, Mark, doesn't.
Now, when you were little, you start off your speech saying that by the age of 7, you could recite all 66 books of the Bible in 19 seconds. What was that all about?
Well, my father would get frustrated because when he was preaching, he expected us to follow him in the Bible. So, you know, we're talking about kids in some instances that are 3 or 4 years old, 5 years old, can barely read. And they're trying to find these passages in the Bible, and so there's a lot of pages wrestling and a lot of waiting. And he just got tired of that and got angry and said, everybody has to memorize the books of the Bible and where they are.
The names of them, you mean?
Yeah, the names of them.
Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. I used to do that in Sunday school, how fast we could do them. But I could not do them in 19 seconds.
Yeah, well, it was barely legible, but they were all there.
So that way you could kind of thumb through it and find that verse quick.
And if you didn't do that, what happened?
Well, you know, if we took too long after, once we had gone through that process of learning, then he didn't accept the argument that we didn't know where it was. So if it took too long, he would stop his preaching and tell someone sitting near the child who was taking too long to hit him. You know, somebody smacked that kid kind of thing, right?
So he was a believer in the biblically ordained corporal punishment.
Oh, he was the master of it.
You don't have any bruises, do you, or welts from then?
Not anymore.
Yeah, that must have been horrible.
Were you homeschooled, or did he let you go to a public school?
No, we went to public school, but there was a lot of tension there because he was constantly imposing his expectations and his will on, you know, the principal and the teachers in the schools we were going to. So, like at Christmas time, if they didn't dismiss us from the classroom when they were celebrating, you know, doing a Christmas celebration or singing carols or whatever, then he would call up and raise all kinds of cane with the authorities of the school. So there was that whole process of separating us out from the rest of the world that he proactively engaged in.
So this is kind of like the Puritans, you know, banned the celebration of Christmas because it was too worldly. That was what your father believed, too?
Yeah, his argument was that the Bible didn't say to celebrate his birth; it said to celebrate his death.
Oh, dear.
So he saw it as So he saw it as kind of a pagan holiday. And you know, the reality was that it did have its roots in paganism. But I was always of, you know, kind of the opinion that it's just a time to celebrate. Don't get too serious about it.
So when you were little, you and your siblings were raised in a great deal of fear, is that right?
Yeah, there was a lot of violence, a lot of physical violence. He was, during the time he was going to law school and for a few years after, he was always taking amphetamines and barbiturates because, you know, he was trying to keep up with all the expectations. So he was just always in a foul mood. Would explode at the drop of a hat, and so we would stay hidden from him and quiet throughout the day so that we wouldn't draw attention to ourselves.
Wow, that makes me want to join that church.
Well, and then you talk about how your father had a fascination with 1 Corinthians 11, and that, for listeners who are lucky enough not to be that familiar with the New Testament, it's where Paul teaches the hierarchical authority of God to Christ, to man, to, at the bottom of the totem pole, woman. And what did your father feel was a sign of woman's submission?
Well, he taught us constantly that women were second-class citizens, that they were to be in subjection, and a sign of that was that they would have their head, have long hair, and they would have their head covered when they were actually in the church. And he had taken it a step further and had come to the conclusion that the word long actually supposed to be uncut. So women weren't allowed to put scissors to their hair, or it was a sign that they weren't in subjection and that they were... He would always take it to the extreme, and to do that meant that you were going to hell. So any kind of error, as far as he was concerned, was evidence that you were in deliberate defiance of God.
And for some reason, he was angry at your mom, and he cut off all her hair or something. There's a story you tell about that.
Yeah, it was... within a couple of years after he became an attorney, they brought charges against him for ethics violation and ended up suspended for 2 years. And it was on the first anniversary, the actual day of his suspension a year afterwards, and he was in a foul mood and ended up getting angry at my mom. We were all off at school, and we come home, and she's sitting in the vestibule, and she's got this scarf or hat on her head, and she pulls it off, and her hair is just all butchered off and down to the scalp in places, and she was crying, saying that she hadn't given him some good words, or she hadn't, she didn't know what she did wrong, but he insisted she wasn't in subjection, so he cut off all her hair.
And that was to shame her then?
That's right, and to, I remember thinking as a kid that, well, okay, she's going to hell, because, he didn't nuance that whole issue of if her hair's cut off, that's synonymous with her being in defiance of God, so she's going to hell. So
wow.
Now, when you were little, I mean, I don't know your age, but when your father went on his anti-gay jag, did the children even understand what he was talking about?
Well, I wasn't there by the time he started that, but I can speak to that because he would, like I said, from the time we were born, he would preach his ideology, and he expected and insisted that his children do the same thing. So we were constantly in conflict with neighbors and with other groups like, the poor Jehovah's Witnesses or Mormons that stumbled across our place, usually left running down the street with us chasing them, screaming Bible verses at them. So it was, depending on the age, there was some level of awareness, but the specifics and the nuances of those doctrines, it's impossible for a young child to understand that, but we did understand what our father expected of us. So
now, before we got to the break, you're basically saying that your father's church is only made up of the family. How many people are now with that church, with your father?
Well, I have 9 of my 12 siblings are still there, and then their offspring, and in a few instances, the people, the spouses.
And how many grandchildren are involved?
Well, that one I never have been able to get a beat on. I think there's about 40 to 45
wow.
grandchildren, or what would be my nieces and nephews. And then there's the 9 siblings, and then there's one other family, the Drain family, that has 5 members that are still there.
Well, when we come back, we'll let you talk about how your family made a living with the children selling candy, and then how you became a freethinker, because what a change. We are talking with Nathan Phelps, who is an estranged son of the notorious Reverend Fred Phelps, the homophobic preacher. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker, and we'll be right back after the break.
Hi, I'm Dorothea Harlow from Fox River Grove, Illinois, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. We're speaking with Nate Phelps, the estranged son of the Reverend Fred Phelps, about what it was like growing up in that very, very Calvinist and fanatical household, and how he lost faith in faith.
And Nate, I was fascinated to read, all these trips that your father and your family took and law school, it all costs a lot of money. And Is it true that, he supported himself by having the children go out and sell candy?
Well, remember I mentioned earlier that, he had been suspended from practicing law, and so he wasn't earning a living, and he hit on this idea to send us out selling candy. And it grew, and pretty soon we were out, you know, every night after school, and then on weekends we'd travel out of the city to, like, you know, local cities like Kansas City or Wichita, and then we discovered that there was money to be made in taverns, especially, you know, later in the evening when
they're drunk.
Yeah, and so yeah, we would be out there, you know, Friday nights, Saturday nights, crawling through these bars selling candy, and you know, the strippers would be standing 15 feet away performing while we were in there selling candy. So.
And that wasn't sinful for the children to be in that place, but.
Well, yeah, it just always seemed kind of odd to me because, you know, literally in less than 24 hours, we're sitting in these pews listening to my father rail against the sins of the world, so.
And they made you made enough money then to travel around to all these places and do protests, huh?
Well, that wasn't what was earning us the money. We weren't doing the protesting at that point. But what they do now is, it's kind of like the notion of, you know, a communal living. Everybody pools the resources, and when I was growing up there, of course, we were required to give a tenth of everything. That was just, you know, you didn't not do that. And as I understand it now from talking to a couple of my nephews that have left, they effectively give about 30% now. So all those who work are pooling that money into a fund that gets them, you know, the tickets they need to travel around the country.
Now, you got out, and I'm assuming there's a story there, and then you lost your religion. So how did that happen?
Well, it was a long process. You know, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, I was doubting even when I was a child, but I also had this powerful influence on my, you know, growing up there with all that theology. So there was a part of me that was certain that I was going to hell. There was a part of me that was hopeful that it wasn't true. And I continued, you know, I abandoned church for about 5 years, and then I started going back. And when my kids came along, I thought that I should be in church, you know, for their benefit. But the more I looked at it, and the more I went to a counselor, and he had a theology degree, and he's showing me all these books to read, and I realized there was just so many correct interpretations of the Bible out there that it didn't make sense. Then I started looking at the history of that book that we call the Bible. And, you know, this was going on for years and years, and finally I just got to the point when I realized it doesn't make sense to accept that these books written in this Bible, you know, have some kind of divine origin in them, because there's too many interpretations of it out there.
The same thing happened to me. It was a gradual, painful process. And at the end of it, you probably felt like I did, like free at last, this load off you, this monkey off your back, that there is no hell, there is no judgment. You're free to be a human being.
It is very freeing, but then there's still these kind of transient thoughts every once in a while where I find myself anxious for no apparent reason and realizing that I'm still holding on to some of these weird, bizarre beliefs, and you got to process through mentally to get back to this point where you realize it's all just nonsense.
Yeah, well, you had a very traumatic upbringing, didn't you?
Yeah, I actually at one point was back in counseling and was diagnosed with PTSD, so I think that might speak to a part of this.
Post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Right? Because there's a lot of violence associated with it. But, yeah, as far as the theology itself, it is very freeing to realize you really got nothing to worry about.
And now you are working on a book about this. Does it have a working title?
Well, yeah, but I don't know if it'll ever come out that way. I call it Son of Belial, because that was what I was affectionately referred to as by my father so often.
The devil? Belial the devil?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Affectionately is sarcasm, huh?
Yeah.
Where are you in the birth order?
I'm sixth in line from the top. I have five older and 7 younger.
And are you also then, I suppose, inevitably estranged from your other siblings that are still part of the church?
Yeah, that was understood when we were growing up, that if we left that we'd be ostracized, and that's exactly what happened. If they tried to talk to me, they would get kicked out of the church too, so.
That's what Jesus said would happen, you know. It would split up families, so.
Oh, yeah.
So if somebody wants to read more about your experiences, what's your website?
It's just www.natephelps.com.
N-A-T-E-P-H-E-L-P-S, natephelps.com.
That's correct.
Well, we really appreciate getting to know you and your coming to talk on this radio program about this very, very bizarre ministry. And
when the book's published, we could have him back on in a couple
years.
That would
and
be fun.
Congratulate you for getting out of it.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me, you guys.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
And we also want to thank our producer, Brian Turani, who is faithlessly there working the board, our engineer, too, and our announcer, Buzz Kemper. This show, Free Thought Radio, is recorded here in Madison, Wisconsin. Go to ffrf.org/radio to hear all the shows that we've done so far and to sign up for our podcast.
Ask for more information at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Ask for a complimentary issue of our June-July newspaper, Free Thought Today, for more about what FFRF does. We have a lot more information in the newspaper.
Can I say it this time?
Yeah.
Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday